And stay tuned for Straight Talk, the show where social justice meets criminal law. Brought to you on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, by Tucker Griffin Barnes. Now here's your host, Andre Hakes.
Good morning, Charlottesville. It is not Andre Hakes. It is Jeff Leonard, station founder. Today I'm here sitting in with what looks like to be half of Charlottesville. Say Ellen DeGeneres. I mean, I read that wrong. Ellen Daniels is my co-host today. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for being here, Ellen. We've got Jennifer Conrad, Gail Hyder-Wiley, Bob McAdams, and Cynthia Neff joining us. We're talking about the Women's March last week. We got organizers of the buses, organizers of the Charlottesville movement, and attendees. Let's take it over to Ellen. Ellen, you want to be my co-host today? Mike is all yours.
I sure would love to do that. I'm really excited to talk about the march today. I know I was there in D.C., and we also have people that were in the local march in Charlottesville. So, Gail, what was your role?
Well, I've organized Charlottesville Gathers, a rally to support the Women's March on Washington, because I couldn't go myself because of mobility issues, and wanted to have an option for people who couldn't do a whole day in D.C.
That's great. And as I said, I was in D.C., and Jennifer Conrad Seidel was also in D.C. I want to just talk about our experiences at the various places that we were at, and Cynthia Neff, you also were in D.C.
Yep. And I've recovered.
That's so great. So Jennifer, how did you hear about the march, and then tell us about your experience there?
Yeah, I heard about it on Facebook. I'll say the day after the election, my daughter marched from her college at Columbia in New York City, and they marched downtown to the Trump Tower. So she was in that first response. And she had a very positive experience. She said people were coming up to the windows of office buildings and retailers and waving to them and thanking them, and that even taxi drivers who were stuck in the traffic, they were locked in with all the marchers, were very appreciative because many of them are immigrants. So that first initial response of this is not okay, my daughter had, which then got me excited to have a chance to do that in Washington. And I went up on a bus organized by Virginia Coffey, who has a friend of a friend, essentially. So we had a bus that met here in the lot here by the old Giant grocery store.
Okay, great. And I was part of a cohort of buses that Cynthia Neff organized. Tell us about your experience.
Well, it was interesting. I mean, not unlike the previous conversation, we were sitting in the Seville Coffee. There were about five women, and we were bemoaning the election and saying, now what do we do? You know, because we'd kind of given up news. We were, it was just also demoralizing. And I remember saying, I think there's going to be a march in Washington the day after the inauguration. And, what the hell? Maybe I should get a bus and, take all my friends up to there. And that's kind of how I started, because I did send out a note and said, who wants to go? And I got, and I think that was the thing, and Gail, can talk about that as well, this kind of need people had to be involved, whether it was here locally or on a bus, and people were really excited. And so the next thing I know, a friend of mine who is a well-known donor in the community said, well, I'll pay for some of, a couple buses if you want to go. And then another one did, and another one did, and we ended up with eight buses. And we could have filled, I would say we could have filled twice that many. But the problem was is that there's only so many buses on the planet, and they were all taken, and so, we had to stop at eight. And but there was so much churn, and the thing that was so cool, we met with Gail early on when she was first thinking about this, and it was cool because, as time went on, I had a lot of women come up to me or call me and say, so tell me again what you think it's going to be like. And I would say, it's going to be tough. I have no idea what the agenda is yet. It's, it's still a work in progress. But, it's at least 2 miles from RFK to, to the mall. And then who knows how much walking. And it'll all be standing. There'll be no chairs. I can't tell you how much food there'll be. And so people slowly went out. But the thing that made it okay for them is I was able to say, there's a local gathering called Seville Gathers, and it's going to be at Ix. And it's just the same, only you don't have to schlep all the way. So it was really cool. It was, it was probably one of the coolest things I've ever done. Somebody asked me, though, was it fun? Did you think it was fun?
No, not really.
No, it wasn't fun.
I must say.
It really wasn't fun.
It was uncomfortable a lot. And one of the signs that kind of epitomized my experience was, it's so bad, even introverts are here. So
yeah.
It was a little bit of a claustrophobic moment for me. And, you know, so.
I mean, there were times, you know, when you were literally, you could feel other people's, the things in their pockets because they were so close. And so it wasn't fun. But, you know, as I stood in RFK parking lot at, you know, from like 5 to 6 trying to help people find the bus, and I figured people would recognize me, you know, they'd come and people came up to me with tears in their eyes and said, you know, thank you so much. You know, I wouldn't have been able to do this otherwise, but my daughter now knows what it means to stand up for her rights. And, I mean, it really got to me, you know, that this kind of profound sense that I'm doing something that's important. And I think all of us who participated, whether locally or there, feel more hopeful than for we sure. did the week before.
Yeah, I think we'll talk about that a little later. For me, the impact, most of the impact came after, like you're saying, just in terms of how we feel as a result of going. But I wanted to take a moment just to give some of the numbers. So there were, there's a couple of PhD students tallying everything in their, in not scientific way, but a pretty deliberate way. And 653 U.S. towns and cities participated. And that's 914 total worldwide. The worldwide numbers are from 3.3 million in the low estimate to 5.2 million worldwide. And that's...
Is that more than... Was it Trump's inauguration? Sorry.
His
Sorry.
Tiny little inauguration. Yeah.
Believe me.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at that spreadsheet, it's like towns you've never heard of. And, you know, Antarctica, India, including India, Beijing, and all these places. So I wanted to get a little bit more into, mic is being adjusted, our experiences. I mean, Jennifer, we've talked before about maybe your top two or three top moments.
Yeah. I'll say going in, I'm an extrovert and I also go to music festivals, so the press of bodies was not a negative experience for me, though I know there were some people who were just on edge about it, so... That wasn't, I guess that just didn't play into the equation of whether I had a good time or a bad time. The first part, the three things that really piqued my emotion, the first one was Janelle Monáe coming out and singing a song alongside the mothers of several people who had died at the hands of police violence or, in Trayvon Martin's case, vigilante violence. And she sang a call and response song and allowed the mothers to shout their children's name, and then 500,000 or how many of us were there were able to shout back, say his name or say her name. And I felt like, you know, as a white middle-class woman, I was grateful for the opportunity to respond to someone, to say, I'm a witness. We will remember your child. We will not back down. We are all here to say we know what happened and it was wrong. And so that was a very emotional moment. And it was toward the end of the rally and we were all exhausted. We'd been standing for 4 or 5 hours. So I wasn't really expecting to have that kind of moment. The second thing for me was once we got shuffling off the mall and we're up to Pennsylvania Avenue, people started shouting, we're not going away. Welcome to your first day. And I thought that was so intense. Like, and I think like Cynthia was saying, now what? Now what is we don't become less passionate or less present. And then the third time for me was when we realized we were walking up to the Trump Hotel, which had been the post office building. It was a very somber feeling. The people outside the front door looked very nervous. There were barricades. And marchers were laying their signs down along the perimeter of the building, almost like I would have seen maybe when Lady Diana died or something, when people go up to Windsor Castle. And so it was a different kind of grieving, but also this tenacious statement, I think, of we are not going away. We are here. We're going to have a voice. And those three moments, like you said, Cynthia, like I will remember those moments my entire life. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. And Gail, what about you locally? How was it for you?
For me, it was seeing Charlottesville on display at its best, its absolute best, and that means it's kind of funky, quirky best, but it was such a feeling of peace, love, and brotherhood, and there wasn't the first problem. There wasn't anybody there being overly militant for our side or the other side or anything. And there was one tiny incident that was unrelated to what we were doing, but something dangerous was found on the property, and the police needed to be called. And even with that, I feel like the police were at their best because they came incredibly quickly and very quietly. I will just about guarantee you that only 10 people knew they were there. Mm-hmm. And that was great. It was just, I was so pleased that Charlottesville responded in the way that I had envisioned this rally to be, which was peace and coming together to show our strength in our diversity.
Yeah, thank you.
Can I ask you a question?
Please.
Gail, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Jeff Leonard again. So when you and I were talking about this a while back at the David Toscano thing, and it was initially, I guess, a protest, but then you guys joined up with a national movement that had some rules and regulations that might not necessarily have gone over well with people who really wanted the protest to go out there carrying signs of, you know, anti-government, anti-Trump, anti what was going on. And one of the emails I got from you said that it was not a protest, but it was a rally in support of something rather than a protest against something.
Right.
Who sort of gave you that, and what was your feeling about, and what was your feedback when you put that out, and did that line up with your sort of personal belief system as to what you wanted that rally to look like?
Well, my vision the whole time was that Charlottesville is better than what the election results nationwide would show. That I wanted Charlottesville to stand up to say what has just happened to the country is not who we are here in Charlottesville. And so in one respect, that's a protest, but I never thought of it as we're going to get together and yell bad things about the person who's just gotten elected, that we were going to stand up and say, no, we're better than that. And so when the national guidelines came out that it was to be peaceful, nonpartisan, not a protest, that fit very well with my vision of what this was supposed to be anyway. So that was a very natural fit for me, but a lot of people heard it as, oh, we're going to have a protest in Charlottesville, and then because they wanted to have a protest, they're people that are angry and they're hurting and they're scared and all of that. And I think the rally, the way I envisioned it, was to give them something positive to focus on. And I did get some pushback from the left saying, well, I'm expecting a fire-breathing anti-Trump protest, and if that's not it, I'll go find one. And I said, you know, God be with you. Fine. Go right ahead. But that's not what this is going to be. And I was absolutely shocked then when, once we finally had finished cleaning up at X, and we went and were watching the rest of the afternoon to see how anti-Trump was, how much anti-Trump stuff was coming from the stage in Washington. And I was sitting there going, whoa.
Can I just add something?
Sure.
I think the thing that was really interesting is we all had to deal with that it's, this isn't a protest, this is a rally. But I would suggest to you that the fact that everybody was wearing pink pussy hats, was a protest against. And if you, the signs, you know, were pretty clear that, you know, there, this was, you know, not only, you know, for women's rights, for human rights, you know, and all, and the Affordable Care. I mean, how many signs did we see about the Affordable Right. Care Act and, you know, LGBT rights and immigrant rights? But there was a real undercurrent of anti-Trump. And I think it was just given. I think if we had the rally this week, you know, after his first week in office, it would be a real protest because everybody's, you know, already kind of been overwhelmed by his first week.
So before we get past this, I want to express my gratitude to Gail and to the Ix complex, to Lindsay Terrell, to Brian Weimer, to Mr. Kuettner. When we first approached them with this idea, they weren't hesitant at all. They wanted this movement. They wanted this rally. And thanks to you, Gail, people that had never knew where that place was or never knew what it was or how beautiful it was or what the opportunity that presents in downtown Charlottesville, they went there for the first time, and hopefully they will go back because that place is it's a resource to me, and it's a resource to our community. So thank you for utilizing them. And Brian and Lindsay, I know you're listening, and Mr. Kuettner, so thank you very much for the use of your art park because I know you wanted that rally.
Right, and it would not have been possible without their support. We investigated other places, and Ix had the right combination of everything we needed plus Lindsay, and Lindsay was really the glue to help hold it together. And I need to give a shout-out to my collaborator, Jill Benner-Williams, because Lindsay put us together, that both of us reached out to Ix, and Lindsay was able to say, well, Gail, you've got this vision of how a rally might be, and Jill has this vision of how a rally might be. And this is one of those times when I'm so thankful that I got out of my own head and just got out of the way to say, you know, This can be bigger than what I envisioned. Let's just work together. And it was a shotgun marriage, but it worked.
Thank you. I wanted to welcome Dr. Valerie Adams-Bass, who just joined us in the studio. She's an assistant professor of education in clinical and school psychology and affiliated with UVA's Curry School of Education and the YouthNext Center to Promote Effective Youth Development. Welcome, Valerie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here this morning.
Good. And I just wanted to get your perspective. We've had some conversations, and tell us your perspective on the march and the events.
Sure. I think for me, the march, so there were multiple marches, right, and multiple rallies around the country and, in fact, around the world, and I would say the march in some ways was very symbolic of all the challenges that women at large face. But I think underneath that, there was also some demonstrations or some exemplars of the things that hadn't really bubbled to the surface that are particular to different women under that umbrella. So for me, it was an opportunity to see what that would look like under this ideology of unity. So I think that was my perspective. Let's see what this looks like when everyone comes together, if everyone's perspectives are going to be represented in this particular space at this time.
Mm-hmm. So I'll admit that when I wanted to do this interview and do this show, I started to talk to people about their experience to try to bring it to the table as well. And so in doing that, I heard, well, why don't you talk to some women of color?
Sure.
I'm like, okay, great idea. As well, because probably most of my friends are white. And so once I started doing that, I started hearing things that I had not heard before, and a lot of my friends had not heard before. So I spoke to you, and I wanted to get a little bit more into that. Some black women did not, they chose not to go.
Sure.
And I was surprised by that. When I was there, I noticed most people were white, and there's been a lot of discussion about the planners of the march being white at first, and then others were asked to join that were women of color. But what is you did not go, is that correct?
No, that's correct.
Okay.
I chose not to go.
Okay,
yes.
Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Sure. So a couple of things. I made a conscious decision not to attend the march. I do have friends. I happen to be African American or Black American. And I do have friends who chose to go to the march either in Washington, D.C. or in their local home states. I made a personal decision not to go to the march because of my concern. I think my concern was, will the issues of all women of all ethnic and racial identities be brought to the forefront of this conversation? So in many ways, I felt that in the past, sort of feminine issues or feminine demonstrations might initially be a cohesive front, right? So a symbolic, cohesive, here are challenges that are associated with being a woman, right? But then when those issues come down to the table and there's negotiations, oftentimes the issues that are associated with being African American or maybe being immigrants or being of a lower socioeconomic class don't make it to the table. And so all women don't benefit. Mm-hmm. And in the past, there was a Million Women's March, which was really a complement to the Million Man March, right, for African Americans. And so this idea of here are some issues that are very specific to African American women that we need to bring to the table, that need to be heard by everyone. And so I wonder with this new march, Women's March, with those same issues that were persistent within the African American community be brought to the table. When we think about immigration and immigrant rights, I wondered if those issues that are specific to immigrant women would be brought to the table. So this idea that, particularly if you're non-documented or undocumented and your children are sick, mm-hmm. and you need to call out from work or you need to go to the doctors, mm-hmm. and you're concerned or worried that that might result in your children being ostracized at school or you being, you know, taken away from work or fired from work or terminated. So I wondered if those issues, those granular issues, would be part of the major platform in Washington, D.C., and historically they usually get lost in translation. And so I chose to sit back and wait and see personally. I said, let's see if these issues come forward, if they remain there.
Okay, thank you. We're going to continue talking with the group here and with Dr. Adams Bass. Right now we're going to go to break, and we're going to listen to a song by Janelle Monae. And 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
Of Ohio is going to represent Senator Bernie Sanders. Let's celebrate her coming.
Sisters and brothers, brothers and sisters, I count it all joy to be here with you on this rainy afternoon. And I'm so glad that Reverend Al did not stop this, because this gives us just a little taste of what our ancestors had to endure. Now, we got trouble. But we don't have middle passage troubles. We got troubles. But we don't have selling your mama, your kids, and your daddy on the block type troubles. This moment reminds me of a spiritual song in the African American tradition, How I Got Over. My soul looks back and wonders how I got over. Now, sisters and brothers, we know we got over by the blood, the sweat, and the tears of sheroes and heroes, some whose names we know and some whose names we do not know. But I'm going to tell you something. We have been here before. Now, the only difference is we got some company, Rev. We got our gay lesbian sisters and brothers with us this time. We got our Hispanic, Asian, Native American sisters and brothers with us this time. I think Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King said we may not have gotten here on the same ship, but we are in the same boat right now. We have been here before. And I know that you might be disappointed, but I want you to take solace in these words. We must accept finite disappointment, but never lose infinite hope. The valley may be lower, but we've been here before. The mountain might be higher, but we've been here before. Because our...
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Today, we're in the studio with a bunch of guests talking about the Women's March and the events of last weekend. I'm here with Dr. Valerie Adams Bass from UVA, Jennifer Conrad Siddell, Bob McAdams for the Center for Peace and Justice, Cynthia Neff, and Gail Wiley. So we just kind of broached the topic of race and the march. We're going to continue talking about that for a little bit. I wanted to introduce Bob McAdams, who hasn't been able to get a voice, his voice in edgewise here. Tell us about your experience at the march.
My daughter lives up in the Fairfax area in Centerville, and we talked about it. She wasn't sure whether she wanted to go, and then we decided, well, we'll go together. And she, with five of her Centerville area friends, we went in a van to the Vienna station, took the metro in, and the train got packed. We were there really early, but by the second station, it was just full. And we got to the meeting point at about 8:30, and the event was beginning at 10. We were actually a block and a half away from the meeting point because it was too crowded to get any further. But one of the things that impressed me most as the place just filled with people was just this feeling of, it was uplifting. It was inspiring because everyone was helping everyone else. If someone needed water or someone needed food or was tired of standing, well, here, sit on this wall or lean against here. The signs were not all manufactured somewhere. They were all homemade. Mm-hmm. And some of them really stood out for me. The one in particular was, asked the question, why am I here? And the answer was respect, dignity, inclusion. And that kind of summed it up. We were all coming together. We were chanting all kinds of things. We were chanting Black Lives Matter. We were chanting, this is what democracy looks like. We were chanting other things in terms of past the Trump Hotel. But it was just full of positive spirit and helping each other up and down curves. There was an elderly woman who had a cane, and we had this high curb to go over, and I was helping her up. And it was just a really great fellow feeling. And so I've got a lot of pictures, particularly of the signs, because they meant so much. We could barely hear the speakers. If they didn't get up close to the mic, we weren't going to hear them. But we could see one of the screens because we were close enough for that. And everything was improvised in terms of the march. I heard later that the place where people were going to march was so full that there was no way to march. So we had to take an alternate course, and then we were shunted down another course. We crossed the mall. We wound up finally on Pennsylvania Avenue, and it was a long, long day. We walked all the way to Georgetown looking for a metro station that we could get into to get back home. And finally, someone called Uber, and we had a ride home. So,
thank you. So it kind of ties into the song the speech. Did you play the speech? Mm-hmm. I think you did. Yeah, we just heard from Senator Nina Turner, her speech given on January 14th, which I believe was for an MLK march. And she spoke about, maybe Valerie could help me with the quote, but bringing one hand forward, and that we've done this before by bringing one hand forward and reaching the other hand back and sort of doing it all together. We were kind of talking during the break a little bit about some of what Dr. Adams Bass was saying, and we had some response to that. Jennifer, maybe you could comment
a little bit. I've been continuing to process the event, and the initial wave was good feeling. My sister went to two marches in one day. Like, there was this camaraderie, this, I would say, self-congratulation that I became very wary of in the days that followed. I had mentioned during the break that all of the marches were very peaceful, but that in part is a response from the police and not just the marchers themselves, that an overwhelmingly white protest just does not get the same police presence as a minority protest might. And I think there's also the issue of, trying to think of how to say it. An issue of deciding what are the actual things moving forward, what's going to define the conversation moving forward. And I find in the progressive news sources that I'm reading two signs keep coming up. One was held by an Arab American man in California that said, I'll see you all at the Black Lives Matter march, right? Or, hey, white ladies, I think is what it said. I'll see you all at the march. And then another sign that maybe would have been in D.C. of an African-American woman standing with a sign that says, 53% of white women voted for Trump. And behind her, and this is where photographers are awesome, are three upper middle class white women like checking their phones, and they've got cute scarves on
and
everything.
Doing a selfie.
And doing a selfie, yeah. So I feel like those signs for me are what are moving the conversation forward. We all feel great that we went. It was a very positive experience. I was honored to hear from many African American women and women of color at the rally. I was very, very honored to be in the presence of the mothers who had lost children. But after that period of self-congratulation, then what? Last week I did go to Congressman Tom Garrett's office for the first time. I hadn't done that before, and a handful of people coordinated on Facebook to go and talk to his aide for 45 minutes. And I feel like I need to keep that momentum, but I also need to be willing to go in directions that are not comfortable for me.
Mm-hmm. I think the impact for me, the biggest impact, because it was uncomfortable for me to be in that space there at the march, and I felt great that I went, but the biggest impact is what happened after and on the bus ride back, and we were just so, we're so emboldened now to take action, and I think that's really important, and I've been seeing it a lot with my friends. So, and that does bring the question, what do we do? And when I've been as I said before, I've been talking to a lot of people, and it appears to me that the only way forward, I think, is to really be in discussion out of our bubbles, and to talk with people who have done this before, people who've gone through the civil rights movement. And Valerie was telling me about... Black women are great organizers, and we need to, so it, to me, it really feels like a moment to unify in ways that we don't even know, not just unify, just to look beyond ourselves to these other groups of people. Can you speak to that?
Sure. So a couple things. I would say, you know, one of the things that I like to say in my classes and when I'm training professionals, youth development professionals to work with children of color, all children of color, you have to get comfortable being uncomfortable, right?
Absolutely.
Get comfortable being uncomfortable. No one likes to be uncomfortable. And so one of, you know, the things I do think and reflect when my sister went, she took my four-month-old nephew who said, look, Aunt Val, I'm now a feminist, you know? So that was really cute. I heard from people who went to the march in Chicago who said something very similar. The police presence was very calm and peaceful, and people were very helpful to one another. It was multi-generational. It was multi-ethic. There were both genders there represented. So one thing I would like to suggest is beyond talking and moving out of our normal circles or bubbles, as Ellen has said, is that we figure out what actions we can take, right? So you can feel very good and then go home and it's over. Sort of like after the holiday season, people say, don't you wish we could be this peaceful and warm all year long? You know, and so into January, I continue to say Happy New Year. People are like, well, that's over. I'm like, it's a new year. We still have 350 something odd days to go. So when I think about this march and I think about what next is, what are those action items? And part of it, Wes' suggestion would be to form allies. Those people you know do the work and you're comfortable with, as well as those people who you may have heard do the work and you're not comfortable with or you don't know them. Be that ally. Do things you haven't done before. So whether it's visiting your senator's office, whether it's going to a community meeting in a community you don't necessarily live in, whether it's listening to someone who's had this experience before and has said, this is what we've done in the past, this has worked, and we're going to do it again, figuring out how to say, what happened in the past when we turn around, and what did we miss? So that when we move forward, we can take that along. And I think that was, for me, was one of my hesitations with going to say, let's see what looks different, right? So we can see all those mothers who've lost their children. We saw them at the Democratic National Convention. But what are we doing to further that conversation around gun violence? What are we doing to further that conversation around racial bias in the justice system? What are we doing beyond sort of listening to the news? And so when you have that feel-good feeling, I would suggest that we have to move out of our comfort zone, get uncomfortable, and figure out who those allies are. Because we could all go home, and even within the African-American community, there could be those who say, it doesn't matter to me, so what, I don't care, and I don't have the same perspective as you. So that means finding an ally so that when I get tired, because it's hard work, It's hard work to impact change. You know, it doesn't come without hard work. It doesn't come without resistance. So who are my allies that are going to keep me buoyant when I get tired and weary? How am I going to continue to reach out to them? And the beauty of having so many social networks now is that the person doesn't no longer have to live next door. So that was sort of one of the things that I pushed on. And then really reflecting on those African-American women who have been leaders in the civil rights movement, who even critique their experience as leaders within the civil rights movement and sort of it being very patriarchal. So not even in that movement, having a lot of work, having rolled up their sleeves, but even not necessarily being fully acknowledged there. So I want to say that there are spaces beyond who we typically are where we need to move so that it wasn't just a symbolic march. And I would agree, the pink pussycat hats were everywhere, and including in the photo. But what does that mean? What does that truly mean? And then if you are a white woman, are you having a conversation with a peer or family member even to say, you know, what does this mean and how do we move forward? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a critical conversation that we have to consistently have, as well as forming those allies so that when we get tired and we get weary, we can continue to move forward.
Yeah, Gail.
That's one of the things on the Charlottesville front, with Charlottesville Gathers being this thing that I formed to do the rally. When I formed it, I hoped that we could become a convener of training sessions and perhaps inspiring entertainment events to carry this work forward and to form those kind of allies, that if there are small groups that would like to have more training to do, for instance, active bystander intervention training. That was a huge draw for our rally. We had to turn away dozens and dozens of people. We need to set up more of that kind of training. And I want to be intentionally, reaching out to groups that aren't just middle-class white women. In knowing that was the part of my vision, now the hard work is seeing on Facebook and other places all of these people responding out of all of this good feeling. Well, yeah, I want to do this and I want to do that, and we need to have a march here and we need to have a march there. And how do we as a community come together so that we have perhaps more events with bigger impact instead of lots of little events with small impact? And how do we do that? How do we negotiate the way forward? And I think we're all going to value input from people who have done this work.
Thank you. Cynthia has something to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Ever since, you know, I became the bus lady and, you know, we took all the buses to Washington, I've been asked, now what? Now what do we do? And I think it's much like you guys are talking. It's, you know, there is no silver bullet. There's no, we can't twitch our nose and make this a perfect world. And so to me, and we have to be a little uncomfortable. We have to be uncomfortable with our reality. And I think that there's, we each have strengths that we bring to this. It's like, you know, I've been serving with FAR, the Public Housing Association of Residents. I'm on their board. I try to raise money for them. And it's like I'm more committed now than ever that part of, you know, the next steps has to be we must get redevelopment done. We must provide. You know, we cannot afford to lose our community here. You know, I work with the Road Forward PAC. We have a candidate development academy. You know, politics matter. You know, people that think elections don't matter, you know, just look around. You know, we're doing a candidate development academy at 2:30, an information session tomorrow, and we have doubled the amount of people. We have almost 30 people who heard about it and are coming. Maybe they'll run for office, but they just want to be involved. You know, there's a meeting of Indivisible, you know, that's starting today, trying to. So I think, you know, we have to find what is it that we can be really good at. Where can we excel? How can we, you know, that reaching behind us. As a former, you know, executive in a big company, I used to always say it doesn't matter how much I do unless I reach back for others. And I think now more than ever in our history, you know, we have to reach back and pull everyone along with us, or we will never break free of this and become who we really, you know, should be.
Mm-hmm. I would say for myself,
looking forward involves looking back. I feel like the question of were there women of color involved in the march, the planning of the march, for me, my homework is recognizing that that whole march was made possible because of the tradition of civil disobedience by the black community before us. So it's not even a matter of, for me at present, at this day, it's not a matter of where am I going forward, but how do I learn the context in which this march happened, which is a long tradition of civil disobedience by the black community. It's the sacrifices that they made. The Montgomery bus boycott was not just a few days. It was like over a year. And I, interestingly, had just gotten the John Lewis graphic memoir, the three-volume memoir March, for my birthday in early January, and so was very aware of the prices that had been paid at previous marches in the American context, of which this was one of those, fell in that tradition. And so I find that I do want to see what's going to happen going forward, but I feel like I need to understand, again, the context better of what did we do? What did we appropriate? What trust was granted to us? Because in the past, these have been nonviolent. You know, why is it that the first women's march, Million Women's March in Philadelphia, was not something that I ever learned about when I was younger? So how, and I find that for myself, I can't just be looking forward. I've got to have a rearview mirror that's giving me the whole American history context of this, including like the Occupy movement and things like that.
Thank you, Jennifer. We're going to go to break. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We'll be right back. Listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. That was I Can't Keep Quiet by Milk, otherwise known as, well, Milk, but her real name is Connie Lim, with the GW Sirens, which has become an anthem for so many women who attended the marches around the country. So we are here talking about the Women's March. I'm here with Dr. Valerie Adams-Bass, Jennifer Conrad-Sedell, Bob McAdams, Cynthia Neff, and Gail Wiley. So let's pick up the conversation. I think, Cynthia, you had a point, and Valerie, you were going to follow up.
Yeah. One of the things that it really has reminded me is, you know, in the past few days, there's been so many kind of horrific executive orders signed. But I don't know, the one about, you know, immigrants and refugees and thinking, you know, of what's going to happen to that. You know, I just thought, you know, that is as much as I have my whole life stood up and fought for abortion rights and for the rights of women, that the issues of immigrants and Black Lives Matter and everything is as much now my issue. I feel as, you know, it was like hearing all this stuff that was going on, I felt as strongly that I must stand shoulder to shoulder with immigrants and Black Lives Matter and all, you know, the disabled, all the people who are being, you know, because their rights are my rights. And then Valerie was telling a great story.
Sure. So I think I had a couple points related to to those comments that Cynthia shared. So one thing that I would say is historically, all those rights have gotten lost, right? So even if you think back to the suffragette, the first march in Washington in 1913, I was sharing with Ellen, you know, there were two marches then. And African-American women, black women at that time, Negro women, as they were called, wanted to participate. And they were encouraged not. In fact, they were told to do the black march. And there was one organization, Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated, that chose to march. And in spite of, even though they were disinvited and encouraged not to. So again, these granular issues about racial distinctions, this has historically been a part of feminist movements. And so when we think about, you know, today, these issues of immigration, racial inequality, and even class, I don't want us to lose sight of class. You know, what I was sharing is that, so historically, those stories have gotten lost, or those negotiating points for rights for all women have gotten lost. So it's not new. It's what do we do now, and as you said. And one of the things that I shared is that, you know, I happen to be a mother of a nine-month-old baby, and I really have the privilege of, you know, expressing my milk at work. I nurse. But I belong to a group of other African-American mothers who have often talked about their wage earners and the challenges they have to try to express their milk, pump their milk in 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And their worry about either being docked or terminated or receiving disciplinary actions. That's a class issue. And oftentimes class is correlated with race, but that needs to be a part of the conversation. The ideology that we want equal rights for women, but if you look at the statistics, even African-American women who may have the same credentials as white American women, we still make less. We still make less per dollar
yep.
than white American women who have the same credentials. So again, as we start to say what's next, what are these action items, we also do in some ways have to look back and say, what did we miss last time? Mm-hmm. And if this is important, we have to make sure that this remains a part of that yep. longstanding conversation. It doesn't get lost around those values that are really familiar to middle-class women.
Yes, yeah.
And so that is one of the things that we don't want to lose. And we want to have those conversations, and that means continuing to be uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The message of discomfort was a big one at a church meeting at First Baptist right after the Charleston shootings. And there was a lot of hope that the African-American community would forgive the shooter, not in that we wanted the shooter to be let go, but just that this wouldn't turn into a big divide between the black and white communities. And I remember very specifically the pastor of the Thomas Jefferson Unitarian Church getting to the microphone and saying, this is not about having black people hurry up and process this so white people can be comfortable again. Like, we need to sit in this discomfort as long as we need to. And I mean, it was a powerful enough statement that I'm still thinking about it all mm-hmm. this time later.
Thank you, Jennifer. We are at 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, talking about the Women's March. Just something that struck me, Valerie, when you were talking. I feel like it's up to, in a way, maybe the people of power who are considered to be in power, white women, or me being a white woman, to reach out and talking about moving forward. In just a couple people I've spoken to, African-American people, they thank me. It's almost like what you were saying. You're not that you're not doing anything. That's for sure what you're not doing. But that you're waiting to see what's going to happen, to see if this is different. I think maybe that's something very different for me to do, to reach out of where I'm comfortable, just to understand what's going on. And to me, that really feels like what needs to happen.
I think it varies according to where you are and what your personal experiences are. And for me, I think by default, in some ways, there are those who typically, as I mentioned, African-American women, black women, tend to be leaders. So by default, mm-hmm. you'll see them roll up their sleeves yeah. and just get to work. Mm-hmm. So there's not that conversation around what do we do now. You just almost automatically start to do it. There are those in the community, okay, this is what we have to do, let's just do it. And so oftentimes people will look to you to say, mm-hmm. I'm waiting for you to do what we know you'll do, and then I'll get behind, or I'll take the baton from you and run with it. Mm-hmm. So from my perspective, there are organizations I belong to, there are things I already do, been doing. Maybe didn't get the attention yeah. mm-hmm. of others, mm-hmm. but I've been doing them. And there are other African-American women who've been doing it, either at a grassroots level or even at a higher, more, you know, executive level. And so for me, I felt like, okay, let's see what's different about this. Because it's not necessarily that I haven't been doing those things. And if you begin to have those conversations and sit in those communities, you'll see there are ways that people organize according to the resources they have. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, Cynthia, everyone has assets. It's an assets-based approach. Mm-hmm. But if you don't take that into consideration, yeah. then you miss that. And so for me, that was my sort of perspective going in. In terms of the bus comment, I spoke with a couple people both here and in other places, and there were quite a few African-Americans women who wanted to take their children, but were concerned about safety.
Yeah.
You know, they were really genuinely concerned about safety as black women for themselves and for their children, and so said, you know what, I'm going to go to the local march, or I'm going to just sort of support by far, because they, as African-Americans, were concerned about their safety. I don't know that white American women have to think about that that's when you choose to coalesce around the issue. Uh-huh. And so that's that racial conversation that didn't necessarily bubble up. So those are those granulars.
Right. So I want to take just, we have a few minutes left here on 94.7 WPVC. We're talking about the Women's March. Just to talk about what we are going to do going forward, I just want to go around the table. For me, I know that, like I said, I'm going to be reaching out, but plugging into groups. I think in Charlottesville, we're all trying to find where to plug into if we haven't been previously. A lot of my friends, for the first time, are dialing congressmen, legislators. We've never done it, and we're doing that. I think that's a great. There's so many apps out there. It can be overwhelming, and it's exhausting. So I think there's this great quote: no one has to do everything, but everyone has to do something. So I think, to not feel overwhelmed, to lean on each other, to plug into groups and resources that are already there. And I think that's part of what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. There's a meeting, I don't know anything about Indivisible, but I'll be going today later on at 3:00 at the library. So Bob, how about Bob, what's your take on this?
Well, there's a group called Together Seaville that meet at the Ix Park at 5:30 every Sunday. And they've been working very vigorously along the lines of Indivisible. Tomorrow, I'll be there with another member of the Clergy and Laity United for Justice and Peace. We're going to be making a presentation about economic inequality. The Clergy and Laity United for Justice and Peace have been working on this for more than a year. And we've arranged with the Virginia Festival of the Book, and they have invited Joseph Stiglitz, a Nobel laureate, to come and speak in Charlottesville for the festival. And then following the festival, we're going to have a community dialogue on economic inequality. And we're trying to bring together as many different organizations and as many different congregations or groups or individuals to participate in this dialogue so that we can really address economic inequality locally without being dependent on any legislation from Washington or Richmond.
Gail.
Yes. Charlottesville Gathers is still evaluating how we become an asset to other groups in this community. But I did hear at a Together Charlottesville Women's Group meeting something that I want to kind of leave people with, that if you can find your focus in the midst of all of these different groups saying, come here, do this, do that. If you can find your focus, what really calls to you, and do that and develop the trust that someone else is being called by something else that you also agree with that's good, and just trust them to do their thing over there and you're going to do your thing here, I think it equips us better for the marathon that this is going to be.
Mm-hmm. I'd say right now my heart is toward issues of division in the church. I'm a evangelical, very, very left-leaning evangelical by the hair of my chinny chin chin. And right now I'm reading a book by Christina Cleveland of Duke, who has written about divisions within the church. And one example that she gave when she visited Eastern Mennonite University recently was a white church partnered with a black church for a potluck. Everyone came, everyone stayed with their own people, and they actually felt more negative, less hopeful going forward about even being able to make friendships under the umbrella of the church because of this reinforced idea. So that's mostly what I'm thinking about right now.
Cynthia?
Yeah. I think the thing, I've got three things that I'm really focused on in the short term. I too, am going to go to theindivisible.org. And not that I think that it's the place, but I think that you got to find one place where you can try to work on the legislation, that you can, you know, have a communication session. And I think that'll work. I am participating with the Candidate Development Academy. We've got to get more non-traditional. We got to have less people like me running for office and more people like Valerie and young people. Oh, my God. And so, anyway, I think that there's a lot to do. I feel a sense of urgency. I'll leave you with my favorite sign. They tried to bury us. They didn't know we were seeds.
Oh, that's fantastic. I just want to give everyone else, or everyone's name again, shout out and thanks to Gail Wiley, who's here, Bob McAdams, Valerie Adams-Bass, Jennifer Conrad-Sadell, Cynthia Neff, and my co-host, Jeff Leonard. Thank you very much for being here. I've been told to keep going. three more minutes. Again, you're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Hope to be renamed.
Resistance Radio. So have we covered everything? Is everybody here? Is there anything else that we didn't cover in the last 3 minutes that we have that we feel like we need to cover? I see Dr. Bass. please, it's all yours.
Now, I just wanted to say that we want to be explicit and make it plain, right? So it's very easy to sugarcoat the issues, but all of these isms that have been mentioned, that Cynthia's mentioned, that I've mentioned, that we have reflected on, Gail has reflected on, we want to make sure that they are a part of the conversation as we organize. The racial inequities, even in that experience. So how do we make sure that that's part of the conversation? The class inequities, the income inequities, as well, I mean, gender is the obvious, but we want to make sure that all of those continue and remain a part of the conversation. When they're not an explicit part of the conversation, it's easy for them to get lost at the negotiating table. So I just want to emphasize that we make sure we do that as we move forward and reach out and touch others so that you are acknowledging those experiences and they continue to be a part of the conversation for that marathon initiative.
No, I think you're exactly right. I think as people of privilege, as we sit around this room, I think it's incumbent on us to, my children, at least my son, they go to Charlottesville City Public Schools. And when you go to the spring fair where my daughter's being a lion or my son's being whatever, and it's on Tuesday at 2:00 in the afternoon, mm-hmm. you go into this room and it's nothing but people that look just like me and my wife and I. And one person can look at it and say, oh, people of color don't care about their children. But that's not it. Mm-hmm. What it is that they don't have jobs that allow them to dip out for an hour in the middle of the day, because if they work at Walmart or they work wherever, you know, if they ask for an hour off, they're going to be asked not to come back. But with our jobs, we tell, you know, families first, so we're able to check out. And people just don't understand that. And as people of privilege, which I think we all are, I think we need to hold the places we shop accountable to allow their employees to raise the best possible children they can so that things like this in the future don't have to happen anymore. So I want to, as station founder or whatever I am, I want to thank each of you for coming here today. I think we should do this again. I think we should bring in individuals who didn't go and hear their stories also as to why they didn't go. And your point, Dr. Bass, is very, very valid, is they just didn't feel safe. And how do we make them feel safe? So anyway, you've been listening to Straight Talk on 94.7. Thank you very much, everyone here, and thank you for listening. It'll be posted at SevillePodcast.com. Coming up next, we have people walking in the studio right now. Coming up next is going to be To Your Health with Mike McBlair. Stay with us, and thanks for joining us today.
This has been Straight Talk with your host, Andre Hayes, brought to you by Tucker Griffin Barnes. Production is from Olivia August, engineering, Mike Friend. Be sure and listen again next Saturday morning at 10:00 for Straight Talk on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.